on step eight this speaking on step eight this morning is my friend Lewis, originally from Chicago, living in Los Angeles, and a member of Los Angeles Intergroup board and co-chair of Away Birthday Party. Lewis has been living in recovery, in a state of recovery for 5.5 years and maintaining over 100 pound weight loss. Welcome, Lewis. Take us away on step eight.
Thanks, Brandy. Thanks, everyone. And, you know, thank you guys for being here nice and early, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed. I have my coffee. I hope you do, too. You know, I love the introduction. And you know, right off the bat, I just want to say, like, even doing service at the intergroup level, co-chairing the birthday party, all these things that I do to be of service, those aren't the things that keep me sober today. The things that keep me, you know, in neutrality with the food, connected to my higher power, are things like this today. This will help me today. All that other stuff, that just helps me when I do it. I really want to start off, we're discussing step eight. And I think the best way to kind of put us in a space where, you know, we know where our feet are, right? It's the morning. We're still thinking about what we got to do with our day. You know, we got stuff to do, what's for lunch. I wanted to start off with how it works. On page 58 in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those too who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very beginning, from the very start. Some of us tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, food, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Now, hopefully you've been following along from the very beginning yesterday. So here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. If you missed that, Carmela talked about that yesterday. Really great. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Told wonderfully by Nancy P. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Marie talked about that yesterday. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Who did step four? Craig. Craig after step four yesterday. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Janet B. wonderfully talked about that. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Melissa C. really hit that out of the park. Seven, humbly ask them to remove our shortcomings, told by my friend Roger. Not dressed as snazzy as he is this morning. And today we're at step eight. Made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. You're like, okay, this is action, right? We just do it. We just make a list. Just throw it on down on paper. Okay, that's part of it. But I want to remind you of something that we were asked to do after step three. And I, of course, I put like bookmarks on everything except for what I wanted to. Here it is. On page 63 in the Big Book, we're asked after our third step, Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action. We launched out on a course of vigorous action. Now, when I hear vigorous, right, I don't think it means, you know, I understood it my first go around as vigorous. Oh, yeah, I'll get to it when I can. I'll get to it when I'm comfortable. I think about the things that I do vigorously, right? I vigorously suck at tennis. You know, those are the things that I do vigorously. So when I'm thinking of vigorous action, there's effort, right? There's drive, there's push. And what's a little scary is that when we get to step eight, you know, I love the AA 12 and 12, because if you're, you know, if anyone listening to this is like a gamer or, you know, a card game player or anything like that, or a computer person, the AA 12 and 12 is sort of like the expansion pack, right? It's like the extra wing they added to the museum. And twice we're asked in step eight on page 77, in the AA 12 and 12, that next we make a vigorous attempt to repair the damage we have done. There's that word. And then we're asked to redouble our efforts. So I want to get us, you know, at least in the frame of mind that this, we can't sit on this. This isn't the thing that I'm going to get to when I can. This isn't the thing I'm going to knock out, you know, once I get through my kid's recital. This ain't the thing I'm going to knock out, you know, once I get through that camping trip. You know, this ain't the thing I'm going to get to later. Page 76, jumping back to the big book. Now we need more action. What do you want from me, big book? Without which we find that fakes without works is dead. One of my favorite lines from here is, we attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. And not far before this, we read about the actor, right? We read about the actor who really wants the show, run the show. And even with our best efforts, right, with our best intentions, you know, I just want to help. But when I'm in the disease, when I'm not working this program on a continuous basis, I cause chaos. Even with best intentions, I will create chaos. And that's not always an easy pill to swallow. Remember, later on in that paragraph, on page 76 in the big book, it was agreed at the beginning we should go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. And here's the thing. When I think sometimes when we read that, when we hear go to any lengths, go to any lengths, go to any lengths, we think of these big, sweeping, massive gestures. I have given up cheese. You know, I have stopped going here. You know, these big, massive gestures. Never again shall I. You know, if you're listening to this, I'm making big arm movements. Like I'm doing a breaststroke, but with my palms out. And that's not the case. Going to any lengths includes the little things. It includes taking 2 minutes to sit down if you're in that state of fear. And make no mistake, I'm a fear-based engine, you guys. Paralyzed by it. As a matter of fact, great example, how fear paralyzed me time and time again. Before I crawled into these rooms, a broken person, I spent, no joke, 2 years not getting my license plate sticker renewed. 2 years. I would drive from Sherman Oaks, California to Culver City, which is about 15 miles, right? In traffic, to and from work, with my head on a swivel, looking for a cop that might stop me. I would find parking where I could back into it no parking person can see my plate sticker. Fear led me to a place where I would exert myself even more to avoid the thing that I was afraid of, going to a AAA and renewing my sticker. That's where fear takes me. Complete and utter inaction. I was so worried what someone would think. The guy at the counter or the gal at the counter at the AAA doesn't, they're thinking about what time they're going home. But I'm so special that I know they'll talk about me in the back room once I'm done. That a camera crew is going to walk out and say, you're our 1,000th customer today. And what are you here for? Oh, I'm here to get my plate sticker after 2 years. I'm just not that special, you guys. Let's go back to the 12 and 12. We take a look backward and try to discover where we have been at fault. Next, we make a vigorous attempt to repair the damage we have done. Having thus cleaned away the debris of the past, we consider how, with our newfound knowledge of ourselves, we may develop the best possible relations with every human being we know. How does that look like to you today? How do you, when you picture that, what does that look like to you? Imagine a life today where you have the best possible relations with every human being you know. Every AA has found that he can make little headway in this new adventure of living until he first backtracks and really makes accurate and unsparing survey of the human wreckage he has left in his wake. Let me tell you something. When I'm in the disease, and make no mistake, I spent 37 years in it. 37 years leaving destruction, worth of destruction in my wake. When I'm in the disease, I practice that in all my affairs, you guys. I practice this disease in all my affairs. I want to tell you that my eating only affected me. I want to tell you that I was the victim the entire time. I want to tell you that. This disease doesn't go away. It's hanging out the window right there, looking in, going, where can I creep in on this guy? Actually, might be behind the laptop. I don't know. But it's there. And it wants me to believe that I haven't left wreckage. The same way today, right? If you're in a recovered state, if you're in recovery currently, you practice these principles in all your affairs. Here's the word again. We now is the time when we ought to redouble our efforts. This reopening of emotional wounds, some old, some perhaps forgotten, some still painfully festering, will at first look like a purposeless and pointless piece of surgery. Totally. Oh my God, yes. Right? I just got through a four-step, dude. I just wrote out all the stuff, persons, places, and things that I was resentful at. I already told you, yeah, sure, okay, I have a higher power that I believe in, right? Sure, yeah, I've turned my life and will over to the care of God. Sure, yeah, I got that, right? I did step four, right? I wrote the stuff down. I told it to my sponsor. I did that. Okay, sure, right? Yeah, I looked at my defects of character. Okay, fine, right? Yes, I humbly asked them to be removed, right? Here are the quotation marks for those who can't see, doing them with my little fingers. Sure, I humbly asked them. So here I'm asking why, right? These are all the things that'll stop us from moving forward. The moment we ponder a twisted or broken relationship, and believe me, I had plenty, with another person, our emotions go on the defensive. I don't know about you. Can anyone relate? Yeah, I see a few heads nodding. That's good, right? Like, can anyone relate? Me, defensive? No. To escape looking at the wrongs we have done another, we resentfully focus on the wrong he has done us. This is especially true if he has, in fact, behaved badly at all. And this is my favorite part of this line here. I'm on page 78 in the AA 12 of 12. Triumphantly, we seize upon this misbehavior as a perfect excuse for minimizing or forgetting my own. I have successfully co-signed on my own BS. Congratulations. Let's remember, a little further down, that alcoholics are not the only ones bedeviled by sick emotions. Moreover, it is usually a fact that our behavior when drinking has aggravated the defects of others, right? Practice this disease in all my affairs. And this is the one that stings. I don't want to hear this. So odds are pretty good you won't want to either. We've repeatedly strained the patience of our best friends to a snapping point. Susan's laughing. And have brought out the very worst in those who didn't think much of us to begin with. In many instances, we are really dealing with fellow sufferers, people whose woes we have increased. Guess what? I have a part in other people's misery. If we are now about to ask forgiveness for ourselves, why shouldn't we start by forgiving them one and all? We can't let that stop us. We're on, of course, a vigorous action, you guys. We're on a rocket ship. We've been asked to double the speed. We're telling Scotty to give it all we've got. If anyone watches Star Trek. If you don't, I forgive you. There are two cases where we had damaged others who were still happily unaware of being hurt. Why we cried should bygones be bygones. Why do we have to think of these people at all? Right? They have no idea. There is nothing more delicious and satisfying than sitting back and knowing that I got away with it. Nothing makes me kick my feet up and put my hands behind my head than me knowing I pulled a fast one successfully. Even though when we just read How It Works and we've been told that half measures availed us nothing, right? We still found corners we'd love to cut. I certainly did. Heck, to this day, I still haven't met a corner I haven't loved to cut. This attitude, of course, is the end result of purposeful forgetting. It is an attitude which can only be changed by deep and honest search of our motives and actions. Now, if you guys, when I was reading the beginning part of How It Works, the one thing we heard about 1,800 times in those first few paragraphs was honesty. And we're asked to analyze and look at these things, but we're not asked to wallow in them. We're not asked to marinate in what a crappy person we think we are. And this is my pitch for why we don't do anything alone in this program. As you're putting this list together, hit up your sponsor incessantly. Ask the questions. On page 80 in the AA 12 and 12, it says, calm, thoughtful reflection upon personal relations can deepen our insight. I am giving specific direction. Calm, thoughtful insight. And the reason I love the specific direction is because all of a sudden, I'll think to myself, this is a hit piece, right? I thought about that personally about step four. I was like, why am I writing this hit piece? What is this? This is the part that I really wanted to hit hard today. We might ask ourselves, what do we mean when we say that we have harmed people? And it's even in quotes in the 12 and 12, right? What does harm even mean, you guys? Like, you know, did I really hurt anyone? what does that look like, right? And we can get lost in the philosophical question, which we love to do, right? Let's overanalyze this to death, because as an addict, Lewis loves to overcomplicate things. Let me get the projector out. You know, remember those, the projector, and they pull it out, and then you on the clear paper, and you get the little marker, and then I'm drawing all the graphs and stuff. Let's get the PowerPoint presentation going of how I can really make this tough. And this is where the AA 12 and 12 comes in as that perfect expansion pack to the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I love this question. What kinds of harm do people do one another anyway, right? Well, let me tell you, I certainly know what harm's been done to me. I got that cataloged. No, scratch that. I've got that holstered. Because I will pull that bad boy out anytime I need to. To define the word harm in a practical way, you might call it the result of instincts in collision. Instincts in collision, which cause physical, mental, and emotional or spiritual damage to people. Now we have a definition. Here is our starting point. Right? More examples. If our tempers are consistently bad, we arouse anger in others. If we lie or cheat, we deprive others not only of their worldly goods, but their emotional security and peace of mind. I didn't actually steal anything, but like, yeah, Lewis, but you hurt them emotionally. We really issue them an invitation to become contemptuous and vengeful. If our sex conduct is selfish, we may excite jealousy, misery, and a strong desire to retaliate in kind. And you might bristle. You're like, sex stuff. All right. Okay. But you can slather that on anything, any relationship. I can arouse jealousy within my friends. I've done that in the disease. Tell me you haven't. Such misbehavior is not by any means a full catalog of the harms we do. And this is what I love, that this is written by and for addicts, right? Remember, when you're reading the big book and you're reading the 12 and 12, all our literature, it's by addicts, for addicts. This isn't some person that like has like 35, you know, PhD, ADD, DDS, all kinds of things after the name. These are people who have had the experience that we are having today, right now, October 17th, 2021 at 7:25 a.m. in the morning Pacific. Your time zone may vary. So even as they're writing this, they're going, hey, Joe, you know what we should put in there? Let's give them more of an example, because I'm pretty hard-headed. Let's think of some of the subtler ones, which can sometimes be quite as damaging. So wait a minute. It doesn't have to be something as massive as, you know, cheating on my spouse or me, you know, decking someone 15 years ago. It doesn't have to be like that. It doesn't have to be me stealing money out of someone's purse. What do you mean subtle? I'm glad you asked. Suppose that in our family lives, we happen to be miserly, irresponsible, callous, or cold. Suppose that we are irritable, critical, impatient, and humorless. Suppose we lavish attention upon the member of the family, one member of the family, and neglect the others. What happens when we try to dominate the whole family, right? Here it is. And this is the one I am 110% guilty of, right? With all my relationships, either by rule of iron or by constant outpouring of minute directions for just how their lives should be lived from hour to hour. That's another sauce you can slather on anything. Doesn't have to be familiar. work relationships. Let me micromanage you to death. I'm trying to help them. Don't you see? It's not emotionally damaging for me to be up someone's butt 24/7. What happens when we wallow in depression? Self-pity oozing from every pore and inflict that upon those about us, right? What if I'm walking around like Eeyore from Winnie the Pooh, just looking for the attention? Because let me tell you something, these steps that we've been working on, today we're on step 8, right? This is a growing up process. You know, yes, we're learning how to deal with life on life's terms, but that is growing up. 5.5 years of continuous abstinence, I'm a baby. And when you think about a baby, I love this part, right? When you think about a baby, what do they do, right? When they're hungry, what do they do? What do they do when they're sad? What do they do when they're upset? What do? They cry and wail. Does it sound familiar? My friends would tell you it sounds familiar about me. I don't know how to act. When we take such personality traits as these in the shop, office, and in the society of our fellows, right, practicing this disease in all our affairs, they can damage almost as extensive as that we have caused at home. I want to take a second. Someone sent me a great suggestion. I want to just give some proof, right? I've said this before. If you know me, you know, like as an addict, I come in skeptical, right? You see the box pop up on Zoom. You're like, all right, you know, okay. He's from Chicago, lives in California, has a nice shirt on. Thank you for thinking so. But does he have this? I want to show some pictures if I can real quick, because we've taken in a lot. This might be a good time to show like that maybe I'm just not talking out of my butt totally, right? Let's see, share screen. If you're listening to this later on, I'm showing everyone a picture of me in the early 2000s. I weighed 380 plus pounds. And you know, if you're on Zoom, even if your camera's off, do me a favor and just kind of walk over to your screen or laptop, walk over to your computer. And I want you to look at this photo. Take a look. This is what the disease did to me. This is Lewis with self-will run riot, right? This instincts gone awry. 380 pounds. And you know, I did the thing where I tried to layer, you know, because I thought it made me look slimmer. It didn't. Look at this. Even having lost 100 pounds, I am still morbidly obese. 280 pounds several years later. I was living this amazing life for a young guy in my hometown of Chicago, but I had no idea because I was just getting by. I don't remember much of standing in front of 30 plus thousand people at a show that my radio station put on. All I gave a crap about was the food backstage. I actually like this picture. It's me at 175 pounds for those listening at home. And what I like about this is that it's like, oh, you know, you see the heads nod. You're like, oh, that's so nice. Good for him. And maybe some of you can see it. I hope you can. But there is a massive God-sized hole in that man's chest. there is a tornado going on in his head and there's nothing behind those eyes. So this is the proof. This is the proof that sure, right? Yeah, whatever, lose the weight, whatever, right? But if I don't take care of my side of the street, if I don't clean up the landfill that my house is sitting on, what happens? What actually happens? And I'm scrolling down for those of you following at home. To me, at 320 pounds, still a couple years before I was willing to come into these rooms, before life had just beaten the absolute crap out of me, for me to go, I'm out. So when I say to you that it is critical, mission critical, that we repair these relationships, and that the book is not kidding when it talks about an AA or an OA making any headway until he has thoroughly done this step. This will happen to you. But obviously, you're free to test that theory at your own convenience. This was April 2020. It's my natal birthday. You know, and I almost want to cry because this is one of the happiest moments of my life. I had a Zoom birthday party. It was right in the middle of the pandemic, too. And I was so excited to meet with everyone on Zoom. And we had like a Zoom dinner party and laughed and, you know, we were there for a while, and it was one of the, yeah, one of the happiest moments I've ever had. Seriously, it was amazing. And that's a real gift of cleaning up my BS. So let's get back to the list, right? Oh, actually, let me give you one other story while I got you here. Gather around the campfire, kids. Gather around. The reason, you know, I come on here, and if you know me outside of the rooms or before the meeting gets started, I really like having a good time. Before I took these steps, I literally thought, I don't know what kind of person I'm going to be on the other side of this. I told you earlier, I was a full-on fear-based engine. And I joke, and I'm genuinely content in my life today. I have relationships with people that I care about so very deeply. I don't hate myself today. I have a God that is just for me and 110% has my back. I cleared the resentment of the God that I grew up with. And F the food, that's not even in the picture. It's not even, that's not the real gift of this. But the reason I come on and I take this so seriously when it's go time, when it's time to do the work, when I work with sponsees, they're like, whoa, I didn't expect you to be like, it's because this saved my life. And there's this experience I had where I got to do it in and out of these rooms. In 2007, my kidney failed. And I was on dialysis until December of 2009, three times a week for 4.5 hours on the machine. That's just the machine time, not including the 30, 40 minutes to get on and off. And did that for a few years until my brother tapped out for me and said, I'm giving you my kidney. He gave me a gift of life. And about 10 years later, in the midst of this disease, losing. You saw the pictures, right? 380, 175, you know, 330. It was about a year and a half in the program, 2 years, and his kidney failed. The kidney failed. And we talked about honesty in the beginning of how it works. And I can't lie to myself. Right? Of course I had a hand in losing that kidney. It didn't just magically fail. I went on dialysis again. They told me that in California, the average wait for a kidney transplant is 9 years. Average. Thank God I had a program. I got a kidney in July of 2 years ago. 2019? 2020? It all blurs together. And I got a kidney 2 years ago in July. And having gone through the experience of dialysis 3 times a week, having the experience of not knowing, the fear of the unknown, not knowing when a kidney transplant would come, and going through the experience of the transplant plus recovery, doing that twice and doing it in and out of these rooms, I can honestly tell you 100% the thing that we are doing this weekend is the easier, softer way. This is the easier, softer way. My best ideas when I lost my first transplant was to wait until my body went into toxic shock and I was in a coma for 2 or 3 days. My best ideas told me once I got a transplant that, guess what, Lewis, you should go to the gym 3 days after you got out of the hospital. My best ideas told me don't tell anyone about your transplant until you're actually getting the kidney or after you got it. Today, or 2 years ago, with God and my fellows, I sat in that emergency room when they told me my kidney was failing. I didn't wait. When I was feeling bad, I went in to the emergency room and they said, yeah, your kidney's failing. I had a choice, you guys. I had a choice. Sitting in that emergency room going, God is or isn't? God is or isn't. What's your choice to be today? And I knew I had the experience of the God isn't. Let me set aside everything I think I know and say God is. Called my sponsor. What the hell do I do next, dude? I am scared and I am freaking out. And let me tell you something. My God and my fellows carried me through that. So today we're sitting here talking about step 8. I could not have had that experience of letting my friends and fellows carry me through that experience if I had not thoroughly done this step. There is not a chance in hell. If I had continued damaging relationships, if I had continued to not clean up my past, there's no way in hell I would have been able to be carried through that. July, it was like the 2 year birthday for the kidney. And what a freaking miracle that is. I waited a year and a half. How is that possible? How could I have done that when they told me that 9 years was the average wait? Because today I live every day, one day at a time. One day at a time. That's why I'm absolutely adamant about anything I did yesterday, anything I did the day before, last week, or last year, doesn't mean anything for me today. If I sever that connection with that higher power, I'm lost. My GPS is off. All of a sudden, I'm driving through the Hollywood Hills and I don't know where the hell I'm going because it's very swirly if you've ever been up there. Streets end for like no reason. It makes no sense. So that's why, like, when I talk about this, it's mission critical. The big book tells us we're on a life and death errand. Absolutely, life and death errand. And this is why it's important for me, to get across that, yeah, when we do this list, we can sit there and get lost in the details. Oh, I'll make a list of the people I'm making amends to now. I'll make a list of the people I make partial amends to. You can da 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 da. No. Who did you hurt? How? Yeah, but what if they're dead? Erase the hard drive. Set aside everything you think you know. Yes, you're scared, right? Yes, there's fear. But isn't it worth maybe possibly having a different experience today worth it? Just a little bit. If there's a chance that today is the day where you could say, like, enough. If you're struggling today, especially if you're struggling today, I hope you're uncomfortable. If you're listening to this later, I hope you're uncomfortable. Because that means it's working. Sometimes the price of admission is pain. But oh my God, today the promises have happened for me. And let me tell you one thing, they are absolutely worth fighting for. And I like to joke around that, like I'm not special, you guys. Like I'm not some guy like who just, what they call a water walker or whatever. Like I'm not a guru or any of that crap. Like I like telling people like I just took enough body blows to go enough. Enough. I'm done fighting. So when my sponsor says, do the list. Push the noise out. Ask fellows about their experience making the list. Look at the people who have walked through this and are actually happy, joyous, and free. Those people who work the big book, the people who practice these principles in all their affairs, ask about their experience. Let them be lights for you. Stop walking in the dark. You don't have to. If it ain't me, someone else here will. So, I can't believe I talked for 46 minutes. So I think now would be a good time to take some questions. And even better yet, if questions, yes, but absolutely talk to me and talk to the 69 other people in this room. You know, if you had fear working this step, how did you walk through it? How did that miracle happen for you? So, yeah. Thanks.
Thanks, Lewis. Thank you so much for that heartfelt share. Yeah, wow. So we'll open up for questions or comments as suggested by Lewis. So this is your opportunity to take some time and advantage of the people that we have here. So Annabelle, you want to go ahead and...
Thank you. My name is Annabelle. I'm a compulsive overeater. Thank you, Lewis. It was just so awesome to hear you, and I appreciate your vulnerability. Are you on my screen? There you are. It really touched my heart because my dad had a transplant that my aunt gave him, kidney transplant, and he's morbidly obese. And, you know, he's also 81. He'll be 81 in a month. And I don't know how long he's going to last because of his compulsive overeating that I watched all my life. The question I have for you is I'm actually preparing to do a night step with a previous boss. And I did a night step with the other boss, and I didn't think I owed this person an amends. This is the one I'm working on now. I found myself, I wrote a good letter and I wanted my husband to read it. I haven't read it to anyone in OA yet. I'm like, what is wrong with me? And so I appreciate that very much. And I will absolutely call fellows. But the first thing my husband noticed, who is also in another 12-step program, is, and I knew he would say this. He's like, I wonder if, I'm like, it's too self-deprecating, isn't it? And he said, yeah. And it's almost like I'm, you know, picking at so many different things that I did almost repetitively so. And I found that it was the ulterior motive was to make sure that she likes me and sees me as so very honest and full of integrity. I want to take out, of course, because it was very clear to me and God kind of spoke through my husband that I need to be less remorseful, if you will, in my speech. And I was wondering if you could speak to that. Yeah. Thank you.
Sure. Speak to, you know, making the specific amends.
Oh, no. Like when I was going through the process of like, I mean, I really started feeling how, you know, I was so rude and disrespectful and, you know, like I wasn't honoring her as my boss. I'm like, I'm my own boss. I've been working autonomously. And who's this younger person? I mean, real attitude, you know, but I didn't know I was in the attitude until I started doing the steps again in OA. And what I'd like, I just really want to get some good, I don't know. I just can't wrap myself around the goodness of taking out self-deprecating, you know, telling on myself stuff in the eighth step work.
Yeah. And this is where, you know, that's exactly what I was saying, where this is exactly how my brain works, right? You know, I like to, you know, complicate things. Let me add more buttons and gears to this than it needs. You know, just like I was saying earlier, you can do columns, you can do however your sponsor suggests you make the list. Great. For me, you know, right. You know, kiss, you know, keep it simple, you know, silly. It's right. Who did I harm? How? Right. The rest, you know, you take that to your sponsor. And the best part is even post that, someone's coming up that is absolutely fantastic. That will absolutely have more to say on what you do from there with making those actual amends. So, you know, the best advice I can give you right now, talk to your sponsor and tune in for the next hour.
Thanks. Nikki.
All right. Hey, Lewis, Nikki, compulsive overeater. Thank you. Loved everything. Curious about in your experience with making the eighth step, if you've done it multiple times throughout your world, and if you've ever had one or two that kind of hang out there and you're kind of in the you know, maybe future column and how you've handled those. I have a few hanging out. They don't cause me much distress, but it's probably rationalization. So just wanted to know your own experience on that.
Yeah, for me, there have been multiple eighth steps. I've gone through the steps, you know, at least 3-4 times, and you know, they all start to kind of blend together. But the commonality with all of them, right, is thorough and fearless. You know, at the end of the day, thorough and fearless. You know, and even, you know, you can categorize them if you want. You know, for me, like some of these obviously itch a little more than the other ones. So sure, you tend to scratch those a little harder. But after a bit, you know, you start to see, look, if it's on there, I got to take care of it. You know, you know, this may all look neat and tidy, you know, but maybe off camera, I've got a bunch of crap, you know, stored in my closet, you know, like, oh my God, look how nice your place looks, Louis. Yay, but don't go in that room and don't look through that cupboard and don't, you know, no, let's just clean the whole house.
Thanks, Louis. Diane.
Thanks, Brandy. Hi, Louis. I just have to say what you shared touched me so much. I've heard so much this weekend, and I was hoping everybody would hear what they needed to hear, and I heard it this morning. I'm a kidney survivor in sense too. I have one kidney and it's damaged, and they've talked to me about the same thing, transplant, and I came into program. Dropped 115 pounds and dropped 3 of my 5 diabetes medications. And my kidney is on the mend as much as it can, all to this program. And I want to thank you for sharing that, because I didn't realize how grateful I am for that. And for the eighth step, what you said about making a list and then writing down their name and writing down how you hurt them. Now, I do that on a daily basis, not as a daily review, as a 10th step or whatever. Do you recommend keeping that up like daily? Do you recommend the eighth step be done daily?
Well, like the purposes, at least for today, is just if you're on that specific step, you know, for today, obviously, you know, whatever your sponsor has you review at the end of the day, great. You know, like, you know, I answer every page it is, I have on my little app, you know, I do my review that way. You know, obviously, whatever your sponsor has you do, sure, you know, but throughout the day, anyway, I'm already looking for where I'm being, you know, resentful, where I'm being selfish. I'm already doing that in my 10th step, where I'm like looking, you know, where am I being fearful? Where am I being, you know, X, Y, Z. So you don't have to specifically call it an 8th step. You know, this is, like I said, for today, at least, this is why we're here, where if you're on this step, you know, so does that answer your question?
Yes, it does, Louis. Thank you for your inspiration.
Thanks, Diane.
Barbara E., you're up next.
Okay. Well, Louis, I never heard you before, but I am certainly inspired by your dedication and so glad you got that extra kidney. And bravo to your brother for giving you the first kidney. My question is kind of an 8.5 question. After I did my 8th step, I went to my sponsor's house, and she called it an 8.5 step, where we reviewed what I was going to say and how I was going to say it. And she said, don't give too many examples of how you harmed this person, because the person will start to drool and their eyes will glaze over. But when I did my first step, my first amends, I said to the person, I'm in a recovery program called Overeaters Anonymous. And one of the things I have to do is make an amends to you for some of the things that I did that were wrong. And the response I got was, oh, so you're doing this because you have to do it, not because you want to do it. And after that, I changed how I responded to people, spoke to people when I did my 9th step. I said, there's been something that's been weighing on my mind, and I'd really like to share it with you. Do you have a moment to listen for me? And I was wondering how you, Lewis, handled it when you made an amends. Because clearly saying, the person responding, oh, you're doing it because you have to do it, wasn't the answer I was hoping for.
Sure. I'll keep it brief since we're running out of time. And I'm sure David will mention this, is that, you know, look, I'm not there to get flogged. I'm not there to take it on the chin. You know, I'm not there to get my butt kicked verbally or physically or anything like that. You know, it's so important. It was so important for me when I do this step, you know, is that, you know, each individual thing is run through with my sponsor individually. Right. So this is the amend. This is the person, you know, that I harmed. Right. And you game it out with the sponsor. Right. So then from there, sometimes it has to be a letter. Sometimes it's got to be a thing. And like I said, I don't want to eat too much of step nine, but like, so to speak, is it's up to your sponsor and you, how you go about that. You know, they'll be custom tailored for each individual person on your list, you know? So just don't do it alone. And, you know, just for everyone real quick, you know, I ensure the kidney thing sounds great. And you're, you know, and so I always call it like, oh, I played the kidney card. You know, you could have your own experiences that you've done in and out of, you know, recovery, right? All of us have those experiences, you know, that we've had in and out of these rooms, right? So use those, right? Remember those. That's, you know, that's the fuel for faith. You know, that is the fuel that you use to fuel that faith and go, right, this is the easier, softer way. It's uncomfortable, right? And sometimes it hurts like a mofo, you know, but oh my God, join us on the other side of this, right? You know, like when they say like trudge that road of happy destiny, like it's, yes, it is a trudge, you know, but holy moly, when we get to do it together, it is so much better, you know? Someone once told me, I know we're running out of time, you know, they talked about like the shipwreck of a life that we've lived, you know, but holy crap, imagine for a second, right? If we repaired that ship, look where we can go. So yeah, that's all I got.